Well, welcome back to the High Tech Forum podcast. I'm your host, Richard Bennett. Today, we're joined by Peter Rasavi, who is a longtime wireless consultant, engineer, and educator. He was on High Tech Forum in March of 2016, talking about LTE unlicensed. And today, we're going to talk about the paper that Peter has written, How Title II Net Neutrality Undermines 5G. Welcome back to the show, Peter.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Yeah, I always enjoy our conversations because since we're both technical people, we can discuss these things at a pretty significant technical level, which, you know, isn't always the case, but that's kind of the secret sauce of High Tech Forum and what we hope to bring to the conversation. So let's dive right into the paper. 5G, I think everybody's heard of it. Not everybody necessarily understands what 5G intends to do. So why don't you just give us a general, let's start with a background on 5G and the progress we're making or have made already to the eventual standard, and why do we need 5G?
5G is a standard that is being worked on right now. The initial specifications for phase one of 5G will come out next year, and we're looking at earliest deployments in 2019. 5G really captures a tremendous amount of innovation in radio technology and networking technology that's happened over the last 10 years and will bring us dramatic increases in performance and ability to address new use cases.
So 5G is a product of 3GPP, right, which is a vendor organization of all the companies that build wireless networks and chips and handsets and towers and all that. They differ from a lot of other standards bodies in the emphasis that they place on use cases, right?
They are in 5G very specifically addressing a large set of use cases. Some of the categories of use cases actually came from the ITU, the International Telecommunication Union, which is part of the United Nations. The ITU defined three general categories that 3GPP then has defined in greater detail. But the three categories of use cases that 5G is addressing includes enhanced mobile broadband. That's really taking LTE-like capability and taking it to a whole nother level of capability and capacity. The second category is Internet of Things, but being able to do it on a massive scale, extremely efficiently. And then the
That's what they call large machine networks, and that really means like smart cities.
Exactly. And then the third category is what people call mission critical or ultra reliable low latency communications. And that is really something entirely new, something that you can't do today with 4G networks. And that will allow entirely new types of applications, such as using cellular for robotics and perhaps autonomous vehicles, but applications where the data is extremely important, has to be delivered very efficiently, extremely reliably, and with very low latency.
Okay, so the G means generation. And if we look back on the wireless standards that have preceded 5G, there was, well, the original analog standard, which sort of after the fact got named 1G. 2G was the first digital telephone standard, but pretty much the only use case that it really accommodated was phone calls. Although kind of late in the game, there was some kind of modem-like, really narrow band data service, CDPD, that was associated with it.
Yeah, and we also got text messaging with 2G cellular. So big innovation at the time.
Yeah, that was an accidental feature, right? That was in the GSM specification for maintenance and network troubleshooting, and they figured out, oh well, we can sell this. Yeah, and then 3G was the first really incorporation of broadband technology, broadband, the kind of data rates that we called at the time broadband, but it was like 300 kilobits to maybe 2 or 3 megabits. So a lot of people wouldn't even, the FCC wouldn't even consider that broadband anymore, but it was started to shift from the voice and text messaging value proposition to data. And then with 4G, we had kind of a major redesign of the whole thing to make it based on internet protocol. It also increased data rates up to the, well, in theory, hundreds of megabits per second.
Exactly.
But all of these transitions have been accompanied by the ability of the network to support a broader range of applications. So the
Yes.
original one application has now given way to probably half a dozen use cases that wireless networks are capable of supporting. So is it fair to say that with 5G, we're probably doubling or tripling the number of use cases, which is to say the number of applications the network can support?
Yes, it's hard to quantify exactly from an engineering point of view, but the intent is to provide a broad range of capability, everything from extremely high throughput to extremely low latency with perhaps smaller payloads to be able to harness existing spectrum as well as new millimeter wave spectrum bands. The idea of 5G is to provide an extremely flexible networking fabric that can address a very wide range of use cases. Some of the use cases we can predict, certainly people will be streaming video, and we know a lot of the smart city, Internet of Things types of applications that are emerging. But just as with 4G, where nobody could have predicted a service such as Uber, we anticipate that once we provide innovators the capabilities of 5G, that they will come up with entirely new categories of applications that nobody has ever thought of before.
There's kind of a provisioning aspect of it, which is the ability to use the additional spectrum and the requirement that we have more cells, higher cell density. But that interacts with the kind of applications that those enhancements of the infrastructure enable, right?
Yes.
And so as we look at the new use cases for 5G, which, I mean, I think the part that everybody understands is that at some point we're probably going to have gigabit wireless networks. And so there's obviously opens the door to some competitive alternatives to the wireline networks that people rely on for home and small
Yeah, let
office
me just
internet
comment on
service.
that. That is one of the not only do we get the higher throughputs? But 5G, especially if you go with small cells and millimeter wave into frequencies that we've never used before, 5G networks will have vastly greater capacities compared to 4G. So a 5G network could have 100 times the capacity of 4G. And that does mean that a lot more people, a great percentage of users, will be able to use wireless mobile broadband as their only broadband connection. Today, the percentage of people that do that is relatively low.
Probably about, I think in the US it's about 15%. So we basically all shift from a kind of a wired first approach to internet access to a wireless everywhere approach. That means that applications that fundamentally have different requirements for successful operation are going to be competing with each other for bandwidth. Now, even though there's a lot of bandwidth available, do we have to manage the bandwidth more carefully than perhaps we do on today's wireline networks?
Yes, that is absolutely the case. Even though these networks will be faster and have greater capacity, the demand from all these applications, existing ones, emerging ones, will require very careful network management. And that is really what my paper is about, that the needs of different applications vary tremendously. And if you manage the network and the experience that the different applications obtain, that overall the quality of experience increases for everybody. The fundamental point is that it's not a zero-sum game. If you provide a higher priority to one application, that doesn't mean another one will necessarily experience a degraded experience.
Yeah, you cited the BitTag report on traffic differentiation to support that idea, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I was one of the co-authors of that report too. And
Excellent.
I think that, well, the part that you cited really is one of the central insights in the report is that because applications have different behaviors, It's actually possible for Skype to take bandwidth from Netflix without the Netflix user having a degraded experience because it's buffered, right? That's not real time data.
If you take a video streaming, there's a couple of factors that can provide a very good streaming experience, even though other applications may be using the network with higher priority. For example, with streaming, if there's a slight delay, if my Netflix or YouTube stream arrives 2 seconds after it was sent from the server, I'm never going to notice the difference. It's not going to matter in my life whatsoever. Similarly, the streams now are adaptive so that if suddenly there are higher priority applications that need to run, the streams can adapt to the varying traffic conditions. So there's a lot to consider in how these applications manage the data, but the notion that everything has to be treated equally all the time really results in a worst case situation.
In network engineering, we have a couple of terms here that you introduced that maybe we can define a little bit: quality of service and quality of experience. So why don't you explain to the listeners what quality of service, because in sort of popular use, quality of service is either better or worse. It's not really the way we think about it, is it?
No. From an engineering point of view, when we talk about quality of service, we're referring to items such as priority level, meaning if they're queued packets, which packet gets transmitted first. We're talking about whether applications have guaranteed bit rate or not, the amount of delay that they can tolerate, the error rate that they can tolerate. It's a very granular, fine system that allows different bearer channels, which are the kind of specific traffic channels assigned to applications. And it's the specific characteristics of those bearer channels.
So bearer channels is a concept that was introduced. It's throughout all the 3GPP standards, but it's heavily, it's very important in LTE. Bearer channels in LTE actually map directly onto the internet standard integrated services that IETF created in the mid-90s. And by the way, we did a podcast with Fred Baker on the creation of integrated services for folks that want more background on it. So these bearer channels are ways in which the application actually specifies to the network, to the 5G network, or 4G network, kind of performance constraints it has, right? What, you know, the network parameters it likes to have in terms of packet loss, delay, bandwidth, frequency of access, and in some implementations it actually specifies a cost that it's willing to pay too. Because there are some applications that, you know, people talk, there's this sort of dirt road symbolism in the net neutrality conversation. There are a lot of applications like backup that are perfectly happy to have a dirt road. But, you know, they should be able to, if there is a sort of traffic-sensitive pricing, applications that don't need high performance, you know, should be able to get it for a lower price, some people would argue. That may not be important in a world of flat rate pricing, but, you know, it's not all about better and better and better. There, you know, it's essentially, you want a good marriage between the service the network is providing and the service the application needs to run successfully, right?
That's right. And you had mentioned that these are characteristics, the quality of service mechanisms that the application requests. It can be done by the application, but it can also be done by policies in the network. The network can automatically detect the type of application and give it the most appropriate type of service.
So it can examine the traffic flow signature and then assign it to a bearer class based on the frequency of data showing up.
Right. That's one way that it can be done.
Yeah. In Wi-Fi, there's actually an explicit mechanism called the T-Spec transmission specification, where an application can actually tell the Wi-Fi access point what kind of service it wants. It's part of the 802.11g standard, the quality of service. I'm not G, E, quality of service standard.
So yeah, I just want to mention on the quality of service that because of the net neutrality concerns, there's been very little innovation in this area. The one application that does take advantage of the quality of service mechanisms right now is voice over LTE. which runs at a higher priority than data. But it's interesting to note that even going back to 3G and 2G networks, voice has always been treated at a higher priority than data. So the idea of prioritized channels is nothing new. We're just trying to take this to an entirely new level. The quality of service in 4G is quite sophisticated in LTE. 5G, the plans in 5G are to take it to an even more flexible level through something called network slicing.
That's an interesting concept, because network slicing, you explain that in your paper. It's how networks can actually go about implementing these bearer classes, right? So instead of like just one network interface, one set of network infrastructure, all traffic gets treated the same. With slicing, carriers they're creating virtual networks.
Exactly. It really leverages not only the quality of service mechanisms at the radio level, but the virtualization, network function virtualization that will be very much a part of the 5G core network. With network slicing, the operator can present different virtual networks for different applications or different use cases. And a use case or particular application using a virtual or a slice of the network will only see that network. It might be a slice that's very specific to industrial Internet of Things, or then maybe another slice that's consumer mobile broadband.
So we actually have network services today that do something like that, like WebEx. WebEx is sort of an alternate internet core network. You use a standard internet access service to get to WebEx. Then WebEx routes your data to all the other participants in the conference. And so, while it doesn't 100% control quality of service, it takes out the variability in the internet core to ensure that for the most part, I mean, people pay extra to use that service, but it gives them better quality conferencing. And it's especially used in educational settings where you have like a multiple video stream, like you have like an instructor and, you know, 50 students, and each student gets their own video stream. It ensures that the quality of those video and audio streams is top notch. But you're saying we could actually do this with slicing. Essentially, every application can be treated in such a way that the interactions between or the side effects of users are minimized. And each user of a certain type of application has a kind of a floor and a ceiling on the quality of service that his application is going to get from the network.
Exactly. And it's important to note that the only way you can implement network slicing with these different quality of service attributes is by implementing very granular and tightly managed quality of service mechanisms, and they cannot be implemented without some form of prioritization. Ultimately, quality of service comes down to prioritization.
Well, some people will say, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. To get a sliced network, you start with a physical infrastructure that has a lot of capacity. You subdivide the capacity into the different slices, and then every application in each slice gets bounded performance. So why not just make all the capacity available to everybody, like the internet is today, and let all the applications fight it out? Like, why manage the capacity?
If you did that, you just end up with a best efforts network, which works fine for some applications, but I don't want my bits coming to my car telling me there's a pedestrian on the road around the corner to get equal treatment with somebody's YouTube video. And that's what you have with the best efforts network, whether you implement slicing or not. Ultimately, you have to provide precedence for more urgent traffic. It's really no different than a highway. The concept of network neutrality is almost like saying that every lane, every vehicle has to be the same under all circumstances. You cannot, that an emergency services vehicle, an ambulance or police car would never have priority, would never be able to put on its flashing lights.
Well, and we kind of know from all the major highways and all the major cities in the US are congested during commute hours. The answer to that congestion is not simply building more highways. It's managing the highways we have more effectively with like carpool lanes, right? I mean, that's sort of a slice approach to the highway.
Exactly.
Yeah, and when you start talking, I mean, there's kind of a big difference between how quickly my cat video downloads and whether the pedestrian dies.
Yes.
That's not a hard trade-off. That's not subtle.
Exactly. Well, the difference, I have an example in the paper, which is that if you're in a best effort situation, there may be a delay of 100 milliseconds in getting data through. And at 60 miles per hour, that's you're traveling almost 10 feet. And if you can control that delay to 1 millisecond, that means that you've only traveled 1 inch. So traveling 1 inch versus 10 feet could be the difference between life and death.
As we get into the Internet of Things becomes more commonplace and we have more smart cities and we have, well, I love this buzzword, cyber physical systems, you know, where you have an information processing system that is connected to sensors and actuators, and it's actually causing effects in the real world. As cyber physical systems kind of replace the web as the primary application that the internet has to support, we have there certainly are some ethical issues, and there's some safety issues, there's life and death issues that come into this discussion, and the kind of fallback position, well, we'll just treat all traffic the same. It just really doesn't, it's not going to work, is it?
No. Whether you call it cyber physical systems or mission critical or whatever, the point of 5G is to address a lot of new command and control and critical types of applications. And without the ability to manage traffic on the network, those use cases will never see the light of day. The network simply won't be considered reliable enough for those types of applications. So people won't invest in those applications, and there will be no innovation in that area.
And from a regulatory standpoint, I mean, you point out in the paper that voice over LTE is considered a specialized service. And so there's an exemption in the open internet regulations that for non-biased data services, which we used to call specialized services, which are things other than internet access, and it's okay for carriers to provide them with different treatment than the typical web application gets, right?
Yes.
But it's not really practical to create to consider every one of these new applications, anything basically which isn't the web, which I think is kind of the big defect of the open internet order, is that it reduces or it confuses the internet with the web. It wants to provide a traffic management and a marketplace mechanism that's appropriate for this one common use case, the web. But it doesn't work so well for things that have really fundamentally different characteristics from the web. We can't, it's just, but it's not practical to create specialized service exemptions for every single non-web application.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense to address all these new use cases through exemptions to the rules. What you need are a set of rules that provide you the latitude to innovate without having to jump through hoops or wonder whether your type of application will be approved.
The two features of the 2015 Open Internet Order that have the technical people I know, and you're one of them, most concerned are the use of Title II and that sort of roving mandate, the General Conduct Standard or Internet Conduct Standard, that actually allows the FCC to enforce rules that haven't even been written yet. So it's kind of like having a backseat driver. You're trying to implement your new, you're trying to build your startup on the back of a new application. That application requires you to work with the carriers to get the kind of treatment that you need. But you've got a backseat driver who could just come along, you know, after you've gone through all this effort and say, "Nope, can't do that. That seems to be discriminatory." So it's a fair.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the uncertainty that you don't want for optimum business development.
The good thing, I mean, the open internet order is not, does forbear from a lot of, it used it reclassified broadband under Title II, but it forbears from a lot of the provisions. And it seems that it actually forbears from the thing that is most relevant in this discussion, which is the tariffing concept, that the network provider can actually offer different services, but every service has to be available to all comers on a non-discriminatory basis. So it's not really a question of treating the traffic the same way, but treating access to the service in a fair and non-discriminatory way. And it's a big jump, actually. And this is sort of more of a telecom legal thing, and it may not be your deal, but it's a fairly big jump to go from making the tariff, publishing the tariff and making it available to all comers who are similarly situated, and managing the network in such a way that basically there's no need for tariffs. And I think what we have in net neutrality's concept, or in the concept of treating all traffic the same, is a failure to really grasp applications and the kinds of network behavior that enables applications to run successfully.
Right. It's a lot of the thinking was misguided, just as it was in treating the internet as a telecommunication service as opposed to an information service. And I think there's a lot to say about that as well.
Well, I mean, that gets us into the discussion about what is offered when an ISP offers internet access, what that offer consists of. And it's not just transmission. It's also DNS, it's caching, it protection from abuse. They actually distribute antivirus software to their customers in many cases for free. You've got all the attack mitigation that goes on. And then that's even before we think about, when these are all software defined networks in which that are sliced according to these advanced applications. And the slicing is something, there is a kind of I'm trying to think about analogies to slicing that makes it more approachable for non-technical people. There's an analogy to that in the voice network, in that the digital parts of the voice network, the TDM network, are TDM is a sort of a crude form of slicing, right? It's time division
multiplexing. Right, it's time division multiplexing. Yeah, it's a very simplistic way of dividing up a resource. And what we're doing as we move into the future is allocating resources in a much more dynamic and programmatic approach.
Yeah, we started to learn how to do that when companies were able to buy they would buy T1 lines from the phone company in the 90s. And as they started to get an interest, and they would use them basically to build so you had a company that had multiple campuses, instead of paying long distance charges for voice calls between the different campuses, they leased a T1 line, and then they put all their inter-office voice calls over that T1 network. But as the internet came to pass, they realized that, well, T1 is also how you get to the internet. So what we'll do is we'll take this T1 circuit and we'll use, say, initially maybe half of it for voice and the other half for internet access. And before then, it was just sort of data between the sites. I mean, you wanted to transfer files between campuses within the private network that was owned by the company. You had to allocate, you had to sort of manage, how much voice, how much data. Can we do it dynamically? Do we have to do it statically? How do we make adjustments? How do we know when we need to, get more capacity for the circuit, that sort of thing? So the engineering behind this kind of dynamic management of network resources has a long history, and it's something that engineers are extremely well aware of, by this point.
Exactly. I think some of the discussions about the kind of telecommunications aspects of the internet completely overlook the fact that the internet is this vast information processing system. The very act of routing a packet through the internet requires processing the packet at every router node. And just to give you listed off a bunch of examples that ISPs provide or examples of how information is processed by the ISP. Another one is that increasingly mobile operators are transcoding video. If that's not information processing, I don't know what is. And then another interesting development.
Yeah, that's a change in the form and content of the communication. It's a change
exactly.
in the form, not Well, and one could argue the content, but it's what does content even mean for a video stream that can be transcoded at different quality levels?
That's right. And now companies such as Cisco and quite a few others are leading the charge to fundamentally reinvent the internet along the lines of an architecture called information-centric networking. Realizing
also known
that,
as content-centric.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so the idea is that you don't route based on an IP address anymore. You route based on the information you want. That very trend shows how the internet and the role of internet service providers and so forth is dealing with information. Transmission is absolutely secondary to all of this. It's just a tiny piece with all these information layers on top.
I think it's interesting that one of the leaders in the development of content-centric networking is a fellow named Bob Kahn, who is the guy who actually started the internet project, secured the funding and did the initial design work. Vint Cerf actually worked for Bob in the creation of the internet. So it's not like it's an oddball idea. This is like a kind of a mainstream view of the evolution of the internet, that we don't expect the internet of the future to be the same as the internet of the past. And with, content-centric networking has enormous advantages. I wrote a blog post on it a week or two ago that worth checking out for the references, if nothing else. So
I'll take a look at that.
So it's entirely an information processing dominated system, and it's not really all that appropriate from a technical standpoint to distinguish what the functions that are carried out by the companies we call carriers and the functions that are carried out by the so-called edge services. I mean, they buy the same equipment, they buy it from the same vendors, they all write their own software. And yeah, the software differs, but you can think about the whole system as just nothing but a big ecosystem of applications.
Right. That's exactly correct.
And I think that's what you argue in your paper, right?
I don't really go into that aspect in the paper. The paper really discusses or emphasizes the prioritization and traffic management aspects. But I am also very interested in these other aspects.
Yeah, you can't cover it all in one paper. So
exactly.
Good idea. Keep it simple. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Peter. I think this is going to be really helpful to people to understand the challenges and opportunities that 5G represents for us and just kind of the woeful state of our communications laws in terms of mapping on to the realities of today's networks and as well as the networks of the future. That a lot of this, we can go with a hands-off approach, deal with abuses in the marketplace as they come up, the way we do in every other industry. But the freedom to innovate one way or another, however that's secured, whether it's through Title II forbearance or Title I or a whole new Communications Act, or the options are pretty, there's a pretty broad set of options for policymakers. And you don't give prescriptions for how the law should be changed, but these are things that folks need to think about.
And yeah, I agree with that. It's a very quickly changing technology area, constraining it in ways that are unnecessary is just not going to have a good outcome.
Well, there you have it, folks. A conversation with Peter Rusavi, longtime wireless network engineering consultant and educator on 5G Title II and the future of the internet. You're listening to the High Tech Forum podcast. I'm your host, Richard Bennett. We do these podcasts at least once a month, sometimes more frequently. We're kind of in a more frequently mode right now. So I encourage you, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can comment on them. You can also listen to them directly from the blog, and you can leave comments on the blog as well. So join us next time when we'll be talking about an equally fascinating topic, I'm sure. Thanks again, Peter.
You're welcome. Great to be here. Thanks, Richard.